Hey everybody, welcome to the ProWrestling.net book club. I'm Jason Powell, he's Will Pruitt, and Will, this is a name you really wanted to go with.
Yeah, I'm not even sure why I like the name so much. It just really entertains me to think of the .NET book club. I have my tea, I have a pastry of some sort, and I am ready to discuss Daniel Bryan's new book.
I have never been in a book club before. I know that may shock some people, but have you been in another book club?
I haven't. I've had many invitations to join them, and my issue is that I always want to choose the books that I read, and I don't like the idea of other people choosing books for me. So, no book clubs for me.
And another shocking twist, no one has ever invited me to join a book. Well, I take that back. There is one. Oprah Winfrey did invite me. It wasn't personal invitation. It was just kind of like, hey, everyone, join my book club. But that's the only one I can think of. We are here today to discuss Daniel Bryan's Yes, My Improbable Journey to the Main Event of WrestleMania. It's written by Daniel Bryan with Craig Tello, which means Daniel probably told Craig Tello his story, and Craig Tello did a lot of work, I'm guessing, Will?
I would guess that. It also features Craig Tello's WrestleMania diary that ran on WWE.com that I'm sure we'll get into, but it kind of seemed like that was most of the Craig Tello stuff, because either Tello did a really good job capturing Daniel Bryan's voice, or Daniel Bryan actually did do a lot of the writing for the core of the book itself, but I thought that his voice came through really nicely.
In the interest of full disclosure, and just to save our ass, I don't know what could change between now and the time this audio goes out, but just in case something does, we are actually recording this on Friday, July 17th. The reason it's, by the time you hear it, I'm guessing it'll be Tuesday? I'm not quite sure, but we've got advanced copies of this, and we're asked to keep everything quiet until a certain time. I assume the date of the book, but we'll check on that to find out. And the way we're going to start today, I know some of you are just going to want to go get the book and read it and not have a bunch of spoilers, if you want to call it that. So we're keeping you guys in mind. We're going to open up by giving you kind of our quick thoughts without any real spoilers in there as far as content is concerned. I mean, we're going to have to discuss certain things we like and dislike. And then we'll kind of get into more of that. So maybe some of you guys want to just listen to that part and then come back after you've read the book, or who knows, however you want to handle it, but we're trying to take care of everybody. So this is kind of our spoiler-free zone, as best we can keep it. I want to start with you, Will. I guess we like to do letter grades here. Let's start there. What do you give Daniel Bryan's Yes?
I would give it, I think, a solid B+. I don't think it's a genre-defining wrestling book. I don't believe it's there with, say, the Bret Hart book, the first Mick Foley book. It's not up in that tier. The first two Chris Jericho books, I don't think it ranks as one of those wrestling books that you absolutely have to read, but I think it's just below them as a really good story that you can invest in the protagonist of. I think it's a really, really good wrestling book.
You took the words right out of my mouth, but you didn't take my joke. The Authority labeled Daniel Bryan a B+ player, and now Daniel Bryan has a B+ book. There's a lot to. I don't think anyone who picks this up is going to come away truly disappointed. I'm with you in saying that, you know, there's better books out there, but if you're a Daniel Bryan fan, I think you're going to come away satisfied. I would say the one area where it, and this might be a big one for some people, but I would say the one area where it was weak was you get the big build-up to life in WWE, and then it kind of felt rushed from there, Will. It didn't go as in-depth on certain things as I would have liked, and I just, it's like the Craig Tello stuff, that blog that you mentioned that he wrote, it's building up to this big moment at WrestleMania, and I wanted more insight. I wanted to, you know, what's his relationship with Vince and Triple H and Stephanie and people? And there's a little bit of that in there, but I just kind of, I felt like he only scratched the surface. I didn't feel like he really went all in, you know, didn't share as many details as I think others have in their books about relationships with the McMahons and relationships with other talent within WWE.
Yeah, he got into some of the relationships that I wanted to hear about, but there were so many more that I thought he could have written about. He doesn't bury anyone really in WWE, which might be a spoiler, might be something people didn't want to know, but I didn't see him as expressly negative about anyone, but he does kind of rush through the WWE portion of his career, and we've seen that in a lot of wrestling, or I'll go with wrestling books. I would consider Brock Lesnar's one, because I thought Brock's had that same, hey, I'm in there, I'm working for it, I'm already out. Like, that's how Lesnar's felt, and Brian's kind of felt the same way, where he wrote a lot about getting there and not so much about what happened while he was there, aside from the big life moments like meeting Brie Bella.
I would not, when Jericho wrote his first book, I remember feeling like, okay, this is really well written, it's entertaining, I like this, but it ended before you kind of got into the meaty stuff, because he broke his into like chapters of his life, essentially, and so he's put out 3 books now. I wish Daniel Bryan would have been afforded the same luxury, and they're not going to do that, but it's a WWE sanctioned book, but I think there was a lot more material he could have covered. I don't think the average WWE fan would have been satisfied with that. I think they would have been let down hearing about his life before WWE, and had it just ended, I think there'd be some complaints. But I do feel like there's so much more material he could cover. There's part of me that wishes that, like, he was taking the Jericho and Mick Foley route and writing this kind of on his own. And I guess WWE, I think, had something to do with the publication of Foley's. But I think there was just, even though his career is in flux right now, and for all we know, maybe over, I still think he could have just gone deeper into life in WWE. But on the flip side, Will, I thought he did a great job. It was very cool reading about life before WWE, whether it was going into detail about his time in certain Ring of Honor matches and what he did before then, going to England. This is not just an old school WWE. There's nothing other than WWE. There's no other wrestling out there. They don't shy away from any of that in the book.
No, it's very clear that there is wrestling other than WWE, and Daniel makes sure to emphasize that wrestling exists, and it's great, and he had a lot of fun there, and he loved it, so I think it'll satisfy a lot of fans of alternate wrestling, indie wrestling, if you will, that say that maybe want WWE to acknowledge them more. This is at least a WWE star talking about his journey on the indies throughout many countries and throughout multiple continents to get to WWE. It's a really great journey in that way.
Dusty likes it.
Yeah, he's a big fan. Or he hates the mailman. I'm not sure which.
I can't emphasize enough. I think if you're a Daniel Bryan fan, a Bryan Danielson fan, if you're someone who's followed his career from Ring of Honor or, whatever point you got on board, if it was before life in WWE, I think you're going to come away very satisfied with that part, those parts of the book. It really is the WWE section that left me wanting more. I'm sure if you followed his Ring of Honor career closely, there's going to be things that he left out. I mean, there's, what is it, about 300 pages, Will?
Yeah, it's about a 300-page book. So he doesn't talk about every match and every feud and every moment that he had, but he hits on a lot of the big stuff.
Yeah, it's not Bret Hart. Bret Hart wrote a freaking novel. I mean, and it's a very good book. I'm not trying to take a shot at all. I was intimidated when I saw the size of it, and then I'm just reading it, and it was phenomenal. I enjoyed it. But it's not, he doesn't go into that level of detail. The sense of humor that Mick Foley and Chris Jericho bring to it, I don't feel like that's there. But I it's okay. I wouldn't want to see him force it. That's just not his personality. And I think that's one of the important parts of the book, is that his personality came through. I was listening to Todd Martin on his Fix audio show that he does on pwtorch.com, and he was talking about Booker T's book and kind of chuckling at some of the wording that was used, because it's just something you couldn't even imagine Booker T ever saying, and it just felt like,
His book is terrible.
Yeah, the second one, I hear.
Yeah,
the first
it's awful.
First one's good, second one not so good. Is that fair?
Yeah, I would say that's a very fair assumption. I heard a lot of good things about the first and never read it, and got the second one sent to me and was really, really just angry as I read it and tried to finish it.
Yeah, and Todd just, you know, I thought it was a really good point that I didn't read that in the second book either. So I actually haven't read either one of them. But he just, I thought that made total sense when he started reading things from the book and you're just listening to it, trying to picture Booker T saying this or even thinking this, and it's like, no. It just didn't have his voice. And I felt anyway, Will, I'm curious to know how you felt about it. I felt like I was reading something Daniel Bryan would write, whether it was, you know, how much of it he actually wrote himself or just relayed the story. I did feel like I was reading Daniel Bryan's thoughts.
Yeah. Like I said at the top of this, when we started mentioning Craig Tello, I felt like this at the very least captured Bryan's voice really well.
I guess to wrap up the kind of spoiler-free section of this, B+, I mean, it's a bad term for Daniel Bryan, that whole B+ player thing. It was, you know, eye-rolling material, but that's what they wanted. So it's not a shot when I say it's a B+. B+ is a nice grade, and I recommend the book if you're a Daniel Bryan fan, obviously. And I don't think it's going to be one that, like Mick Foley's, I think, kind of grabs some non-wrestling attention even, and just because it was so... The way it was written was so humorous and things. It's one of those where I would say Foley's books and Jericho's books are the two that I could tell like non-wrestling fans that may want to, hey, any wrestling book I should check out? Yeah, even if you don't follow closely, you're going to enjoy these books because of the humor in there. I didn't get that from Daniel Bryan's, but again, if you're a Daniel Bryan fan, Will, I think you're going to come away very satisfied with your purchase.
I posted something about getting this book on my Instagram when it first got sent to me, and I had a friend from college I know has never watched wrestling, comment on it, yes, and have like emoji fingers pointing up, and when I asked her where she had heard of it, she's like, from Total Divas. So I think if you're a fan of Bryan Danielson on Total Divas, you will enjoy this book.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess, you know, one other thing here before we get into it, and then we'll start getting into what I'm about to talk about in more detail. There are some questionable things. There's one name in particular that's left out that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I know there's some political things there, but it just, this person is still mentioned on WWE television.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I should point out that we are tentatively scheduled to get interviews with Daniel Bryan. We'll see if it happens. They postponed. It was supposed to be coming up by the time you're hearing this week, but due to his schedule, I assume with the book signings and things like that, it's been pushed back. Hopefully that will happen, and we can kind of get some answers from Daniel if it does. But sometimes these things, just saying, we're supposed to. I'm not promising anything because obviously. We'll make it work if they give us the opportunity. Sometimes these things, you're going to get the interview, and then it gets pulled. So, but just letting you know that we have been contacted, and we're working on it. We're hoping it still occurs. There's a name left out of the book. Was there anything else just glaring omissions that you noticed without getting into? We're still in the kind of spoiler free zone.
I didn't notice a ton. It covered the big moments, like you said. Aside from that one notable name, I didn't see anything that I just really needed to hear about or that I thought I would hear about and not. He mentioned, I think, pretty fairly his return to the Indies after getting fired and wrote a lot about that incident. So that would have been the only thing that I thought maybe WWE wouldn't want out there is, yeah, they fired him and, oh, he just went back and was fine. And no, they let him say pretty much everything he needed to say there.
Yeah, I was happy that was covered, the firing was covered the way it was. I don't know if that was something that would be glossed over quickly. And you know, it wasn't like he dedicated chapters to it, but I mean, he was certainly acknowledged it and addressed it in the book. And so that part is interesting. I think if you're cool with it, we'll kind of move into the spoiler section.
Yeah, let's.
All right. So everybody, hopefully give you a second here if you just want to hear the non-spoiler to go ahead and hit stop. Hopefully you have by now. Let's start with the name that was left out of this thing, Will. AJ Lee. She was with Daniel Bryan at WrestleMania. He goes into detail about the frustration of having his match with Sheamus, the cut or move to the pre-show 1 year and then turn out to be, you know, a seconds-long match the following year. And AJ Lee was part of that. She was the one kissing Daniel Bryan that led to Daniel Bryan taking the brogue kick that gave Sheamus the win. But there's it wasn't even like she was referenced. It wasn't like they mentioned that he had somebody with him. Nothing. It was just like she didn't exist and there wasn't a person there.
That was strange, and it leads you to wonder, is it WWE that, you know, maybe he wrote paragraphs about AJ Lee and they went, no, she's leaving, we gotta, or she left, we have to cut them out. But given the time that we got this book, I think we were sent it sometime in April, so it was just after the AJ Lee retirement news broke. I almost want to say it's an omission by Daniel himself, who decided not to mention AJ in his book for whatever reason. What do you think?
I'm not sure. That's certainly something I'm hoping we find out if we do get the opportunity to interview him. Was this his choice, their choice? I mean, for all we know, you know, I'm not trying to start a rumor, and I'm just saying, I mean, for all we know, hypothetically, maybe they didn't get along, and he's just like, I'm not mentioning her. I have no clue. I've never heard that. The timing of it is interesting. I should point out, too, Will and I got the advance copy, which was kind of the early version of the book. They did send a second hard copy, but I'd already finished the book, and so I wasn't just going to go back and reread it to see. Will, you were mentioning, like, there's some photos and things added, but it kind of, I mean, just glancing at it, it did seem like the text was the same. So I don't want people to pick this up and go, they mentioned AJ, what are you talking about? I don't think they did. I don't think they went back and added that, but I think we should at least mention that possibility.
Yes, so we have advanced copies, so we may have missed something, but I don't think so. I'm actually looking through it right now to see if AJ is mentioned here.
And you know, while you're doing that, I think not just WrestleMania, it's not even the failure to just mention that she was part of that. I kind of wanted to know more. You know, it was again, a part of the disappointing element of the book is that lack of detail in WWE. There's some things he goes into good detail about, and then there's things like this where not just the Mania part, I kind of wanted to know about the whole dynamic with him and AJ Lee and CM Punk. That was a fun chapter of Daniel Bryan's career. I really enjoyed AJ Lee's work at that time, kind of bouncing between the guys. I kind of wanted to know about their relationship and what Daniel Bryan thought of those times.
Here we go. He looked beside himself as he told me the bad news. This is Arn Anderson, is the he in this. AJ and I would kiss, distracting me, then Sheamus and I would have a one-move match at WrestleMania 28. So it is mentioned here, but I am not seeing... Oh, also, I was put in a story where AJ Lee would valet me and I would be mean to her. It didn't take long for me to turn into a smarmy little asshole the fans wanted to see get beat up by monsters like Big Show and Mark Henry. So AJ is mentioned. There's no... a couple times, but there are no real rundowns of any true interactions with her looking at this. But okay. at least now we won't have to hear about the omission of AJ Lee quite as much.
Yeah. Okay. I'm happy you looked that up then, because yeah, we did get that advance copy, and there have been some changes to the second version that they sent, but I it's good she was added. I mean, I still think if there's not like a section kind of going into a little detail about that program, I think people will be a little disappointed. But at least they mentioned her. That I just found that to be bizarre. Let's go back to the early portion of the book, and whether it's the childhood or once he started getting into just wrestling itself. I mean, what grabbed you there? Anything stand out, or was just kind of pretty basic story of a guy starting out and, you know, becoming a fan and then starting out in the industry?
I found his family story to be kind of fascinating. He talked about his father's struggles with alcohol really, really candidly, and talked about how he was described a lot as his dad without alcohol and how it was almost two separate people there. And I found that to be really humanizing for Daniel Bryan, who already seems like such a well-rounded human in general. But even more so, it seemed like this really made you feel for him and want him to succeed. So that was really good. And then, yeah, it was a story of someone working hard and the basic, I tried to go to college, but instead I went to wrestling school thing we get in a lot of wrestling books. And yeah, it was really basic at the beginning, but I thought very well told and well done.
Yeah, I liked, you know, just hearing his backstory. I mean, some guys are a little more interesting than others. The father situation was very interesting. The whole family dynamic with his sister and all that. It's may not be the thing that people come out of it talking about, but it certainly kind of sets the stage and gives you a better understanding of who he is. And it became a big part of the book, as it wasn't intended to be, but we'll get to that with his father's passing. It's been a little bit, a few weeks since I've read it, but is he one of the last guys now that he struggled to find a wrestling school? I mean, you hear, you know, back, certainly with guys older than Daniel Bryan, there wasn't a pro wrestling school on every street corner like there is today, and we didn't have the internet. So I don't recall, Will, was that kind of his story too, where he had to go searching to find a wrestling school, or was it easier for him?
I think he wanted to go to one school.
The Malenko School.
Yes, he wanted to go to the Malenko School, and it was shut down. And he
after he'd sent some money.
Yeah, after he'd sent some money, which I don't think he got back.
Right.
Good wrestling lesson right there. And then found the Shawn Michaels School being advertised and ended up going to the Shawn Michaels School.
And the Shawn Michaels School itself, I guess one of the pleasant surprises, I was never quite sure just how involved Shawn was. I've always kind of wondered what that relationship is like, because yes, it was Shawn Michaels, I think it was a Texas Wrestling Academy, I believe is the name. It was his school. I'm sorry, what?
Sorry, trying to shut my dog up.
Oh, no problem. It was Shawn's school, but he also had Rudy Boy Gonzalez was there. I think Paul Diamond was one of the trainers, and Shawn was at that point in his life, which Daniel Bryan acknowledges, where he was consuming a lot of pills. And so I've always kind of wondered, how much did Shawn teach these guys? Was he kind of a absentee type? Because you do hear stories about that, certainly the later days of some of the various incarnations of the Hart School. You'd hear some story. I think Jericho probably got into some of them in his book and things like that.
Yeah.
But with Shawn, because you'd see their on-camera relationship and whatnot, but I was pleasantly surprised, Will, to find out that he was very actively involved. Yes, he did have his bad days there. He was dealing with the bad back, but he still went in the ring and took a bump and got scolded by his mother for doing so. But he really took these guys by the hand. And so that part was refreshing, because I just wasn't sure.
Yeah, that actually made me really happy to hear about the Shawn Michaels School, because I was someone like you who had always wondered, did those guys get any time with Shawn, or was it Shawn Michaels is the name and everyone else is in the ring with him? And I had hoped it wasn't that, as someone who was a fan of Shawn Michaels through his in-ring career and up through his return and eventual actual retirement. So I was happy to see that. And I thought the stories of him at the Shawn Michaels School were really fun. The stuff he did, especially the stuff with Brian Kendrick, who is now training the next great women's wrestler, Eva Marie.
Yes, yes. I'm anxiously awaiting her match on NXT television. It kicked off the taping, so we'll be seeing that. How great of a trainer is Brian Kendrick? But Shawn, not only was he, fairly hands-on. I mean, I think Daniel, if I'm wrong about this, Will, refresh my memory, but I think he gave a lot of the credit to Rudy Boy Gonzalez, I think it was.
Yes, he said that Rudy Boy was really, really great in the ring with him, that Shawn... He talked about Shawn teaching them the stuff that Shawn was great at, not just moves, but psychology, like learning just how to put together and wrestle a good match and learning how to work crowds, and Rudy Boy teaching them a lot of the technical stuff in the ring.
And, Shawn was there with them. They started running shows, and it wasn't like Shawn, I don't think he had any, grandiose visions of, becoming rich off these shows, but he wanted to get his guys some work. He got them, I think, booked in Japan, I want to say, at one point. Eventually got them, WWE, got them a look from WWE. And then, Will, he was pretty aggressive in following up on that, making sure his guys were taken care of.
Yeah, that kind of amazed me, that they would bring in Shawn's guys for tryouts and Shawn would work really hard to get them signed. Again, it's something where you never knew how good of a trainer Shawn Michaels was, and his school was open for such a short amount of time, but you see this and you go, oh wow, Shawn really gave a crap about these kids and what they did.
Yeah, that part just was that was really cool to read, and I didn't feel like I was reading lip service, like Daniel trying to spin the story in a positive way. I kind of felt like, all right, he wasn't just gushing about Shawn Michaels. It read like a guy who was just telling a story of how things were.
Yeah, it was a guy saying this was the world I existed in.
And, I mean, the other thing, as you get with a lot of the wrestler stories, with books and things, I guess depending on the personality, Bret Hart didn't go through this, but, you know, certainly a guy like Jericho did, just the struggle. You know, the struggle of first off, saving up enough money to go to this school, the struggle of sharing an apartment, sleeping on a floor, and as he moved to California, like, I think sleeping in the facility, and I mean, it just...
Oh, yeah, sleeping in the New Japan dojo.
Yeah, he worked out a deal with them where he could just sleep in the dojo. I mean, it's just the stories of sacrifice, I hope people aren't becoming numb to those because so many guys have told their stories. I mean, it really just, I don't think you can say enough about that, Will, just what some of these guys do sacrifice, how they have to live to be able to just get into the business with no guarantee of any future success. They love the business and want to get into it. And at the time Daniel Bryan got in, it wasn't like it is today. You know, he was a very small guy getting into a business that, yeah, there were the Shawn Michaels and Bret Harts, but there were still some pretty jacked guys. And, you know, at that time, it was like, Daniel Bryan, you know, guy. I even remember, like, when he was in Ring of Honor going, I just don't know if he's ever going to get a WWE opportunity, not because of the talent, but because of Vince McMahon and his taste. He always liked the bigger, the bigger wrestlers and things. So he's getting into this business with no guarantee of anything, but all the sacrifice. I mean, that always stands out to me when a guy goes into detail about that. And it's not, you know, to Daniel Bryan, just reading it, he's not telling the reader, look at everything I went through and lay, just telling his story in kind of a matter-of-fact way.
Yeah, one of the most fascinating parts of it to me, and it was a short section, he talked about living with Shinsuke Nakamura in the New at like the apartment that was attached to the New Japan Dojo or around there, and like the and all of that. That was just fun to read, knowing where those two are in their careers now. But he talked about the journey in a really nice way. It wasn't, this was the struggle that I lived. It wasn't, everything was great and I'm always happy. It was honest. I would say one of the key descriptors of this book is honest. It is a very honest portrayal of Brian's life.
Well, and he even talks about how he's not a good liar. That's not who he is. He's just a truthful guy. And that comes through just throughout the book. And I do think there's times, and we can get into this a little bit later probably, where he's too tough on himself. You know, some of the things with WWE and the whole SummerSlam thing, it's like, oh boy. But as far as like some of the earlier things went with some of the training schools, I mean, I don't want to skip too far ahead here if you have more to say about like the New Japan Dojo or when he, I mean, he just admits, speaking of honesty, that he was a horrible trainer. He got a job for with Roland Alexander in California as the trainer of his facility, and just said he wasn't good at it. You know, some of it was he wanted the guys to be a little more motivated and women and come to him with different ideas or, you know, what they wanted to learn, and they really didn't. And he just wasn't the guy to motivate them and get them fired up. So he just labeled himself a lousy trainer.
Yeah, he basically said, I am not good at teaching this to people, but I'm good at doing it, which is really kind of funny. He took multiple jobs as a trainer, too. Like, he trained at he was a trainer at multiple places, and every time he's like, I'm not good at this, but had to make a living. Like, they offered me a job and a place to live, because I think he ran the ROH school for a while as well, and said, I needed the place to live and the job, so I did it. I was one of the things, I guess, in his journey that surprised me was him, how often he really didn't have a place to live and how it never seemed to faze him.
No, and he's that type. I mean, I got to be honest, if that's me, oh my God, I'd lose panicking. My mind. You know, I couldn't do it. But he is just kind of that laid back guy. I don't think, you know, I'm hoping the guy has a nice house, but I'll bet it's not some mansion or anything like that. He just seems like he's that guy that, if he just worked a 9-to-5 and wasn't making great money, he'd find a way to be happy.
Yeah, he seemed like he had, in a sense, mastered being content in almost any scenario.
I brought this up with Magnus. I really enjoyed the section where he talks about going over to England and working in some of their holiday camps. And Will, the basic idea is that they'd go to what we would call, I think, tourist resort kind of things, and they would have wrestling shows there. And he talked about how that got him to kind of just open up a little bit as far as like becoming more of a character. And the gimmick there, Will, was that it was because kids would drag their parents. The parents didn't care, but the kids did. And you kind of had to give the kids what they were looking for.
Yeah, it was doing a very funny show, basically. He talked about it, reminded me of Jericho's book in a way, where Jericho seemed to have a key thing that he took away from everywhere he worked in a different style. Brian learned a different part of what would eventually make the full Daniel Bryan package. He learned to work comedy. If you ever, I mean, I know not, you probably never will, but he did a series of matches with Tyson Kidd on that Saturday Morning Slam show the WWE had. And if you ever go back and watch them, they had hilarious wrestling matches where they weren't allowed to throw punches or do neck breakers. There were ridiculous rules on that show because it was a Saturday morning cartoon wrestling show, basically, but not Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling, because that would be too good. But he and Tyson Kidd had hilarious matches on there. And a lot of it is the style that he describes working at these places. He seemed to, from everywhere that he went, pick up a different part of his game or be able to display a different part of his personality. And that was really interesting to read how those things eventually helped him.
And he wasn't getting rich over there, but he liked it so much that, I mean, it just sounded like he would have been more than happy to stay. What was it, Will, do you recall that ended up making him come back to the States? Was it the Ring of Honor job, or?
I think it was the Ring of Honor job, and it seemed like that was just kind of a summer gig. Like, he would go over there for the summers and then come back and do Ring of Honor and do all of that. I know he mentioned coming back one time, and that was when he had the phone call from Gabe that said, I want to make you the guy in Ring of Honor. That there was that situation, I think, that kept him from going over there a little bit, and things like that.
He going back to Saturday Morning Slam, is that where, I can't even remember the exact promo, but it had something to do with a bear? Do you remember that one?
I think it was that. It very much, I think, was that one.
Look it up on YouTube, folks. I think if you just do a search for Daniel Bryan and bear, it should pop right up. And, along with, I don't know, maybe you shouldn't enter that if you're under 18, Will.
Yeah, but I wouldn't suggest it.
Maybe WWE, Daniel Bryan, bear might help. Am I leaving anything out from this early portion? Because, I mean, the way the book is structured, there's not like the, unfortunately, like a table of contents, and then everything starts out with like Craig Tellow's blog. So it's kind of hard to get a just kind of paging through. I don't want to.
Can we talk about that blog real quick?
Yeah, please do.
Yeah. So the Craig Tellow blog, it was actually a really cool piece around WrestleMania 30 weekend. It was a diary following Daniel Bryan around for the weekend, and it talked about his preparation and his training, and it was written for WWE.com over the course of that weekend and in complete kayfabe. It, you know, he knows he has Triple H staring him down. And I remember reading it that weekend and thinking, this is a really cool piece. Like, it walks the line well. Yeah, it's on the kayfabe side of it, but it's not like it's completely like Daniel Bryan is going to injure and harm and things. Like, it's very real in the way that it walks the line. I remember enjoying the journey through his week because there are fun portions of it, but it's before every chapter in the book. So what would happen once Daniel got on a roll telling his story in his voice, you would have an interruption of Craig Tellow's voice talking about a weekend that is still 10 years in the future. It was obnoxious to the point that I eventually just stopped reading them. And I would recommend anyone who's reading Brian's book to do the same thing. Just skip over them because they're pointless.
That was the one thing you and I talked about, was that portion of it, you know, a couple, I don't know, probably a month ago now. We didn't really compare notes coming into this either, and other than that little thing, and I had this, you know, I'm just like, oh, it's from WrestleMania, it's weekend, okay, you kind of had to explain what it was, and I had the same opinion you did. It was like, I don't need this. Then as the book went on, I'm like, well, okay, it's building up to this big moment, I get that. And so I kind of felt obligated to keep reading it and all that. And then I went back to, I did a 180. I went back to where I was because I, by the time, as I'm getting closer and closer to that portion of the book, this thing that it's leading up to, there, it just, it felt like a letdown. It's like you're building all the way to this WrestleMania match, and then there's so little about it. It was like I went through all this Craig Tellow blog to get to this. It kind of felt like it was setting you up for a letdown. Did you? I know you didn't read it, but I mean, just in you didn't read all the Tellow stuff. This, as you were reading the book, but you kind of do you feel the same way? Or did you feel like no, he did a good enough job talking about his title win?
I thought he did fine talking about it. I mean, it's the end of the book, and you could tell that he was proud of the accomplishment. But again, Brian is very honest, and he talked about how it was never the thing that was supposed to happen.
Right.
Like, he was really very, very honest in saying it was never what was supposed to happen. So he talks more about the things that happened around him that weekend, and it's the ending of the book. It's the climax and very quick denouement of the book. So it's quick, but I don't know what more he could have said about his WrestleMania title win other than it was, that it happened. Like, I don't know. I didn't want him to go into hysterics about it saying, and I felt like I was the best, and that moment was everything in the world. And, like, I didn't want him to be dishonest in that way and say that it was the most, like, that it was bigger than it was. And I think he had respect for what the moment was.
And I would agree with that, but it made the blog, when it's like that's the length you're going into, then it kind of makes the blog feel unnecessary. I mean, I know we're on the same page with the
Yeah,
blog
it
portion.
does.
Yeah, I don't know why they went with that. Again, good blog, and if I didn't read it that week, and I think they must have been doing it. Was it a daily update thing? Because I did. There was a couple times where I'm like, hey, I've seen this before.
Yeah, it was a daily, like hourly update. Like, I remember checking it at the end of day, at like the end of that each day, that WrestleMania weekend, and reading about everything that day. But I think it was kind of a live updating thing that Craig Tellow was doing. And like I said, it was a great piece for WWE.com. I think it was a really weak portion and addition to this book.
I did enjoy the portion of the book where he talked about Nick Bockwinkel basically endorsing him in a way that changed the finish of a tournament final, I believe, wasn't it, Will?
Yeah, I think that was the King of Indies tournament, even. Like, it was one of the King of Indies tournament that's kind of famous for bringing the idea of Ring of Honor to Gabe and Kerry's mind, and to like the inciting incident that led to Ring of Honor. I think it was that tournament he talked about Bockwinkel really liked his work and saying that kid needs to win.
Once we get into the Ring of Honor section, I mean, there's good detail here. And again, if you're somebody who watched all of that, I'm sure there's going to be, why didn't he talk about this? There's always going to be that. But I was pleasantly surprised at how much he got to go into. And I thought Gabe Sapolsky came off very well, Will.
Yeah, it seemed like he and Gabe had a really, really good relationship, that they had a special bond as like talent and promoter slash booker, and that Gabe really took care of Brian and really cared about him.
I was it was part of the Ring of Honor thing. He started talking about some of the things that he and Nigel McGuinness were doing, and that it, in retrospect, they went too far because of some of the issues that Nigel has had. I was very surprised to see him mention Chris Benoit and the study that showed he had the brain of an 85-year-old Alzheimer's patient when his brain was examined after the fact. I don't know. Should I be surprised by that? I mean, he's on the network. I know they've just, they're not glamorizing Benoit anyway, but it's part of their history, so they leave it there. I'm okay with that. But I just, with W, I mean, if they were going to leave AJ Lee's name out of the first draft, I guess I'm surprised that there was any reference to Chris Benoit allowed, period.
I think it's because the Benoit thing, it influenced, it was a pivotal thing, and maybe they didn't see AJ Lee as one in that first draft, and obviously they've rectified that at this point, and she is mentioned, maybe not praised or torn down or, anything. There's nothing really about her other than that she's a human being, but they I think they do a nice job of explaining why the Benoit thing is important. And it's about, I believe, a match that occurred beforehand, before the Benoit tragedy, but went up on pay-per-view after, and that it made between Brian and Nigel McGuinness, and that it made fans really uncomfortable because they spent a good portion of the match just headbutting the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
And they realized after that they, one, the match should have never aired, and two, that they needed to change their style. They needed to change their approach to what they were doing. And if I can throw some opinion out there, it stunned me, having read this before WrestleMania, having just seen WrestleMania and having seen Brian break out the headbutts with Dolph Ziggler on the ladder and the next night and all the stuff with Sheamus, and then reading this, I was stunned that he brought back the headbutts after writing about it so strongly here.
You took the words right out of my mouth, and even... Now, those were, it wasn't like he was doing headbutts every night as part of his, you know, big surge in WWE, but he was doing top rope headbutts and, you know, just different moves where it's like, why are you doing this? But yeah, it in a weird way, he seemed like he doesn't address it in the book, whether it was his decision to stop, or I'm guessing WWE's, based on some of the comments he's made in interviews, for him to stop doing the top rope headbutt. Sorry, my dog cleared her throat and I lost my train of thought there. But Brian defends it as he wants to be an artist, and he doesn't like being restricted and things of that nature. But once he took the headbutt out of his repertoire, then it seemed like he started going back to some of those tactics, like you mentioned, that the direct headbutting, the back and forth headbutting, and that's something that, you know, if we get him for the interview, I think needs to be addressed, because I'm all for a guy having artistic freedom and viewing this as an art form by all means, but for a guy to be as aware as he was while writing this book to turn around and do those things, Will, it's very sad, especially considering, and we still don't know the exact nature of his injury. I mean, I think we all suspect, yeah, we know he's had shoulder issues. We suspect there's some concussion things here, but they've never actually outright confirmed or denied anything involving this. So, I mean, it's sad for a guy to be that aware, writing the book, to be doing these things.
Yeah, it's really, this is very editorial, so excuse me. It felt, after you read this book, when you look back on the matches he had after it, the matches where he was getting dropped on his head by Luke Harper, the headbutts, all this, you know, all of those things, I think part of why this book is a little bit sad, and why it comes off as, and why it'll give you some depth into Brian, it almost comes off like those matches were him really desperately trying to cling to something, and he realized that he couldn't do what he used to in the ring after that neck surgery, and he wasn't 100%, but that he needed to do something. He still needed to be the best, to be the artist that he was out there, so he started putting in other moves. He started adding things that are still in his repertoire that he had removed because they were dangerous. He said, I need to do these because the crowd needs me to do them. And he didn't realize that people would have been fine. I mean, I don't say this in a derogatory way. People would have been fine if Daniel Bryan would have gone the next few years being Hacksaw Jim Duggan, only with the Yes chant instead of USA. Like, people would have been more than happy with that, or something between doing extreme moves in that. And I, just reading how aware of these things he was in his book, and then seeing what he did in the ring, it kind of broke my heart a little bit.
Yeah, he's not, and I'm not saying every ECW wrestler was like this, but there certainly were guys that had a very limited move set, and the violence portion, and the, you know, the ability to dish it out and take it, that kind of thing, was their calling card. Daniel Bryan's not that guy. When I think back to, not that I was like watching every Ring of Honor show back in the day, but when I would see it, Daniel Bryan was admittedly was a little vanilla at times, but in the ring, he certainly wasn't doing the Yes stuff then, and he wasn't doing, that I recall, the top rope headbutts and the missile drop kicks and things. he was a lot like a guy that I know he, I believe he wrote about in the book as someone that was an influence on him. Dean Malenko, he just struck me as a guy, you know, that if you build him as like the master of a thousand holds, it would work. And I really yeah. thought he would go back to some of that. Once he came back from the neck slash shoulder thing, I just felt like this guy has, I think we even talked about it in a .NET Weekly once, he has that ability. He doesn't have to be a guy that just does the Jim Duggan thing. And I know you're not saying that he would have had to have resorted to that, but he did have, he's got so much more in his arsenal. I don't know why he felt the need to do the crazy, the headbutts, and just, I think there was some stubbornness there. And I don't, he makes it seem like there, he was being restricted artistically. I think he was just being, I think there was stubbornness, Will. I don't think he was being restricted. If anything, he was restricting himself by not trying to work in more submissions and things that he was so damn talented with.
Yeah, I think a lot of times art flourishes when given a box. Like, you can give someone the whole wide world to create with, but that's too much and you can't figure out what you need to do. When you put some constraints on something, you actually have to get a little more creative. And Brian, I believe, showed, again, talking about those Saturday morning slam matches he had with Tyson Kidd, he showed how creative he can be. One interesting thing to note, I guess there's a fake story out there about Brian doing an interview claiming that his time in wrestling is over, and Brian just tweeted in response to this, "I appreciate the thank yous, but the entire interview claiming that I said my time is over is a fake. I will be back wrestling."
Nice.
So there's that. I mean, that's one of almost the closest we've come to hearing that he said he will be back.
Well, he said it in one of the interviews he did. I don't remember if it was on Raw or a Kickoff show. I mean, he's been saying it, but it's one of those, when he says it and there's not a date attached to it, you don't know, okay, does that mean you're coming back soon, or is this, I'm coming back and he means it, but even he doesn't know if it's true.
Yeah, there's always that worry that maybe he's saying it now, but it's not going to happen. But I don't know. I want to hope. Leave the memories alone.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely hope the guy's able to come back. The Ring of Honor section, is there more that stands out there?
The building of his feud with, I believe, Mara Fuji, it was? Hold on. Let me flip into the photo insert in the middle.
Morishima.
Sorry, Morishima. That's what it is. Sorry to Japanese wrestling purists who want to kill me right now. Yeah, Zim's like, how can you confuse them? the building of his feud with Morishima, I thought talking about the psychology behind that, the entire build to it, and even going into the matches injured, it was telling one of how there needs to be regulation on the indie scene at a certain point, but it was also telling of how Brian was able to work so many different styles and how he was willing to do so many different things, even in Ring of Honor. And I thought spoke to some masterwork from Gabe as a booker, and Gabe is an interesting booker when you look at his whole career booking, but it points to some really good stuff that he did. And it also points to some really interesting and different work that Brian did as champion there.
Cookie eating contest.
That was a delicious part.
It was. It made me very hungry for cookies. I don't think it was supposed to, because it sounds like it was pretty gross, but I'm not going to get into every spoiler little detail here for people, but there's a good cookie eating contest that occurs in Ring of Honor, and even talking about it now, I wish I had a cookie. I guess Ring of Honor, the thing that stands out to me, I like the build of you know, all the psychology with Morishima, and I did get to see a lot of that. That was really good stuff. And I Ring of Honor came off very, very well. Do you think that, given what's going on, you know, with NXT and New Japan and Ring of Honor today, and just all the, you know, the early drama that I think is only going to get worse, do you think if this book were written, if it was like a project that was just being started, that we'd get so many Ring of Honor mentions in this book?
I don't think we would.
Yeah.
I think maybe they'd cut out a few. I would hope that they would still allow Daniel Bryan to tell his story the way he wanted to tell it, but part of me wonders if maybe they would say, you know, an indie promotion I worked for, or something of that nature, instead of talking about Ring of Honor by name as often. I still think they would get mentioned by name, but maybe slightly less.
The Wrestling Road Diaries did get mentioned, so I'm guessing they will sell a few extra DVDs off of that.
Good, that's a fun DVD.
It is, yeah.
Needs an editor.
And very, well, sure, yeah. But very interesting time, too. I mean, with he had high liver enzymes, I believe is what it was. And so some of, you know, the way he was going through that was chronicled, and he addressed that. When he was trying to get into WWE, he thought he was, you know, just go through the medicals and you're fine. Well, they never really came up with a good reason for it, did they?
No, he said that some people just naturally have them, and they realized that he did. I think it was more they just needed to do multiple tests and some in-depth testing to make sure, well, he's not on steroids or anything else, that it was some sort of natural thing.
You know, and I mentioned at the top, you know, I wish there would have been a little more in-depth. I wish he would have gone a little more in-depth on WWE, and it seemed a little bare there. But as I'm paging through this, now there's some it's not – I was going to say it's about 150 pages before he gets into WWE, but, you know, roughly the halfway point of the book. But there is the firing, and so it's not all WWE. But I would say damn near half the book is related to WWE. So maybe it just is like this guy's had a long career that you're trying to cram into 300 pages, and it can be difficult to, you know, there's definitely going to be some things left out. When I think about the... like the Ring of Honor sections, I mean, again, great detail there, but looking back on it, Will, he's not spending a ton of time talking about the various personalities either. I mean, he does some with Gabe and some with Kerry and Adam Pearce, but it's not like he's spending a ton of time talking about his friendship with CM Punk, for instance. And you know, it's like Punk is mentioned, but it's not like a big breakdown of here's my chapter on CM Punk.
Yeah, and he doesn't do that with anyone other than, I think, Bree, and I think he kind of has to there. I mean, I would also, were I writing a book, have an entire chapter about Brie Bella, but I've never met her. So that would be the creepiest thing. Although most of it would probably be things I've inferred from Brew Bella, who I swear is the Lost Bella triplet. I had to get one in there, right? But this... he doesn't talk a ton about just individual relationships, especially with a ton of people in wrestling. And most of what he says about people is really positive. It's this person was my friend. This person was a mentor. This person was really, really good to me. And I respect him for that because we've seen a lot of wrestling books that do the opposite. And it's complete burials almost through the entire book.
Well, and the one guy I would say that if like, Brie Bella ever had to worry about Daniel Bryan stepping out on her, I think it would be William Regal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they might... something might go down there. I mean, he's worn the man's trunks.
Yeah, I mean, Regal, he's so highly respected. I mean, this just reading Daniel Bryan writing about him not chapters, but just how many times he referenced him and what he learned from him and all the things he's done for him. It just made me want to go get William Regal's book. And, I mean, he's still doing things like this for people within the industry. I mean, kind of off topic here, but I'm guessing you'll agree with me, Will. This guy needs to go in the Hall of Fame.
William Regal. Oh, yeah. And I think Daniel Bryan's the guy to induct him, even though there are a million people to induct him. There's WWE trainer Robbie Brookside that could induct William Regal. There's Fit Finlay, who's an agent who could induct Regal. There are so many people that have worked with and been influenced by Regal, and right down to Regal being a big part of the recruiting process for WWE and obviously being someone that Paul Levesque trusts quite a bit. I think Regal needs to be in the Hall of Fame very soon. He mentioned at Comic-Con last week that his time in the ring is up, that he's done. He would love to be in the ring against the people they have in NXT now, but that's just not in the cards. So I think as soon, you know, next year is the time. They need to put Regal in their Hall of Fame and let like 20 people on stage to induct him.
And when it's such a feel-good story, you know, to get knowing what he battled his way back from. And yeah, he had a bump in the road that derailed what probably would have been his biggest WWE push, but he's obviously since then gotten his life cleaned up again. And I mean, he's just done so many positive things in the industry. He's the guy that I think is, I mean, he doesn't have a negative word to really say about anybody in the book, Daniel Bryan, that is, but Regal is a guy that just consistently stands out as somebody that he admires. And also the friendship with Kane, which we'll get into in a little bit, but I think we need to start with, the freaking nightmare that was NXT originally, not the version you're seeing now that everybody's gushing about, but the version that Vince McMahon called the next evolution in television, the game show, Will. Wow. They didn't tell these guys anything.
No, and I wondered that. I think we, or I wasn't on the writing for the site at the time. I believe I was a member of the site at the time, and I remember you kind of mentioning, hey, we don't know how much they're being told. Maybe they're all in on it. They weren't. Like, that was Vince McMahon hazes the rookies on live television once a week for an hour. That's basically what that show was supposed to be. And it was the most uncomfortable watching experience. And you understand now, reading Brian's book, how uncomfortable it was for the wrestlers involved as well. What a train wreck.
It was. I mean, and it wasn't. They'd put him on the spot for promos and things like that. Like, I think Daniel Bryan's first promo wasn't something he planned. Is that right? Or his first NXT promo, I should say.
No, they just sent him out to the ring. It wasn't something he planned, and this will amaze people who watch WWE today. It wasn't something scripted. They, live on television, had The Miz open the show with Daniel Bryan backstage, and Miz sent Bryan out to cut a promo. Just said, you need to go introduce yourself to people. And sent him out into the ring. What? We're on TV! Like, Bryan's reaction to it and everything is really great, and it's a little... In a sense, it's a little hint as to just how crazy Vince McMahon can be.
Well, and wasn't there, weren't there like physical moments where the guys weren't expecting anything and Vince would just call the spot?
Yeah, or moments where the guy, you know, all of the challenges, they talked about the, the relay obstacle course thing they were supposed to do. And one of the obstacles was eat a hot dog, but Brian was like, I'm vegan? No.
He doesn't even eat meat.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's when that burial started.
Well, there was that, and then he's not a soda drinker, and they had to guzzle soda or something, and so he struggled with that. And it's just like that. The unintentional comedy that is the early NXT section is awesome. As
they need that stuff up on the network.
Well, and I think it is?
No, it's not. They need it up on the network.
The next evolution in television is not on the network. Wow.
No.
Maybe it's just too evolved for the network.
I think it might be.
This has gotten out there before, whether it's I don't know if it's interviews or what, but I'd certainly heard this before, but they wanted names, name ideas. He couldn't be Bryan Danielson, and he wanted to be, but so they had him come up with names. The two favorites he mentions here, Buddy Peacock and Lloyd Boner. How different would life be right now?
I would have loved Lloyd Boner main eventing WrestleMania and thrusting his fingers into the air going, yes, yes, yes. I mean, it really makes the flying knee look different, too, if you think about what he's actually hitting you with.
Oh, man. Lloyd. I wonder how close they came, like, with Buddy Peacock.
Yeah. Oh, he basically would have been Dalton Castle then, right?
Oh, there's only one Dalton Castle. Don't even go there. So he has the really good match with Chris Jericho, and he still wasn't the guy. I think he thought he was going in there because of his background as a potential ringer, but they just really weren't looking at him all that much. He was eventually eliminated from the show. Do you remember what caused the elimination? I thought there was a story there.
Yeah, he had said the week before, because he was booked to lose every match on the show. So the week before the first elimination, they said, well, Brian, who do you think deserves to be eliminated? And Brian, playing it up, Brian kind of trying to kayfabe a little bit, said, I do. I haven't won a single match. I deserve to be eliminated.
That's right.
Knowing full well, too, that the fans aren't going to vote. I think it was a fan vote type of thing over the week, and that the fans weren't going to vote for him to be eliminated because the fans loved him. Well, the next week on the show, they, before the first elimination was supposed to happen, said, well, we actually have something, Brian, you said this last week. Again, he's out there on live TV or live to tape TV, wasn't told about this beforehand, and they replay the footage of him saying that he deserves to be eliminated, and they said, well, you have to go home. You're eliminated because you said you deserve to, and we're still going to have an elimination tonight based on the fan voting.
I do remember when he said that on the show thinking, like, if memory serves, it was like, that's a good line, because he is on this losing streak. His character should be kind of feeling down and out. And so it made sense, but this was one of those things I don't think they scripted. He said it. It was true to his character, but it cost him a spot on the show. But he didn't know what the future held, but yeah, he was right back. Vince McMahon promo class, Will, your thoughts?
It sounds really fun. I kind of want to participate in it. I want Vince McMahon to tell me to cut a promo on some random object.
And then how great is Daniel Bryan was the topic that Vince was going to cut a promo on. And Vince stood there in silence. And then he looked me up and down judgingly before his face turned to various levels of disgust, amping it up as he went along. Vince never said a word for about a full minute, and then he said he was done. He went to sit back down, and I stopped him requesting he stand up front while the class critiqued his promo. And Vince basically told him he was using the silence. I mean, Daniel Bryan wasn't bearing this. He actually said he learned a lot from that time in there. But just the dynamic between Vince and Daniel Bryan is just so bizarre. What did he say? He's talked to Vince on the phone like twice or something like that?
Yeah, it actually reminded me, as a side story, it reminded me of a story, I want to say from Jericho's book, or I forget which wrestling book it was, about how top guys need to have many, many meetings with Vince McMahon, and how you always call Vince and you always talk to Vince, and the top guy is always in there with Vince. And then he says, I didn't talk to Vince much. And I just kind of laughed, because it's definitely Daniel Bryan who's like, why would I need to talk to him? I mean, he's going to tell me what to do at TV. Like, where you hear about Steve Austin, like, obsessively calling Vince, like, you think if we put out another Austin 316 shirt, I can make $1 million? Like, that was Austin and Rock's way of doing things. And Brian is just like, I'll see Vince on Monday. There's not a problem. And it seems like that was Brian's attitude the entire time he was in WWE.
Thanks for that. We're never getting on podcast one now that you've impersonated Steve Austin.
I've heard that's the kiss of death.
Apparently. One of the positives about Vince, and we've talked about this before, I do remember the backlash when Daniel Bryan was paired with The Miz. And when you think about it, really is genius. I mean, just because that was what they were going for, was just that outraged reaction from this guy who's been around the world doing all these things, being trained by the arrogant guy who had the reality television show background, and most people at the time didn't even think belonged in a wrestling ring. That right there, I got just thumbs up to Vince McMahon for that idea.
Yeah, I actually think, and Brian even talks about being friends with The Miz now, like that they're buddies now. It makes sense that they'd be buddies now. They were put in that situation together, and I thought from the very beginning that was kind of a fun pairing, because they each at the time had what the other guy didn't. If you remember, Miz at the time was a fantastic promo, doing some of the best work of his career. And Miz, I still think, is a really good promo when he has something to talk about. But you had Miz doing his, just bringing so much charisma and so much promo ability to everything. And Brian, who was this straight technical wrestler who didn't have all of that ability that Miz did.
The firing. Still one of the most bizarre stories I think most people...
The whole Nexus attack is bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, they make these guys lie to everyone. I think he felt most guilty about lying to William Regal. And, they why are you guys in your gear? We got to do a photo shoot, I think was the idea. It was what they were telling people. So it was like this top secret thing that they were going to hit the ring and do this attack. And, of course, he chokes Justin Roberts with a necktie, and he spits on John Cena. And I thought the interesting part about all this was that nobody else seemed to think that this was going to result in Daniel Bryan being fired. I think it was Michael Hayes who asked him what he learned. Yeah, well, Michael Hayes asked him what he learned, and he said, no choking, no spitting. And Michael Hayes replied, that's right, it's okay to make mistakes as long as you learn from them.
Yeah.
And then he got fired anyway. Will, what? I still don't know. I mean, what sponsor is going to get that worked up and say, he has to be fired? I just don't buy that. Like when the Finlay thing, that one was when he had somebody, he was the agent for a house show and somebody interrupted the national anthem and the National Guard got upset. That one I buy. I don't buy that there was a sponsor out there that was so worked up that when the, if they did, if anyone actually called WWE and said, "We said no, there's not supposed to be any choking or spitting on your show," where Vince McMahon or whoever took the call can have said, "You're absolutely right. It won't happen again. He's new. We apologize." And end of story. But instead, they fire him.
Yeah, that was a big overreaction. And WWE TV at the time was kind of an overreaction. This was, I think, in the middle of Linda McMahon's two Senate campaigns. Or it may have been during one. I can't quite remember. But it was in the middle of that. They had gone PG about a year earlier, and they were still very, very cautious in how they were PG and doing basically G-rated things just to make sure they didn't cross the line. We hadn't had the random swearing that, like, Brock Lesnar would bring to the show in the future. So WWE at the time was really overcautious in making sure they don't upset those sponsors. And I believe Daniel Bryan was a victim of that. And he was fired. Sucked. So it was really weird.
What you're saying is that if it wasn't for Daniel Bryan choking and spitting, Linda McMahon would be a senator right now.
I think so. I think that's what would happen. I was entertained by the stories of, like, John Cena in the middle of that attack directing the Nexus guys that were in the ring, being like, no choking, as one of them was about to choke him. And then at another point, someone goes to spit, or after Bryan spit on him, he heard, like, John going, "No more spitting, no spitting." And it's like, John, one, kudos, because I watched that attack a few times and I could not hear you calling spots. So, you know, maybe learn from that. Two, good guy, John Cena.
And Vince, you're using new guys as part of your angle. And granted, Bryan had been in the business for a long time.
But no one clued them in.
That's the thing. You know, if you have these rules, I don't, maybe tell them. Maybe it's like they got their handbook, like the broadcast team does, and, you know, somewhere on page 643 in section B, it's actually listed there, and Bryan missed it. I don't know, but that whole thing, I just shake my head going, think about how different wrestling could be right now, because he acknowledged it in the book. Paul Heyman wanted to bring him into TNA. How different would things have been had Paul actually done business with TNA and Daniel Bryan said, "Yeah, I'll join you"?
Wrestling would be pretty different, because if Heyman had gone into TNA, we probably wouldn't have TNA in the dire straits that it's in now, and especially if he had been able to bring in Bryan, because, you know, Paul Heyman saw in Bryan what Bryan would eventually become, and that's a big name headline guy. And I think they could have done a lot of good together, especially if Heyman would have had the control in TNA that he really wanted.
I remember talking with Paul about that, and he, like, the vision for Daniel Bryan and TNA that Paul had was certainly different than what we've seen in WWE. He wanted to establish him as basically a badass shooter that would just pick people apart in seconds, you know, and just to really make people take notice. We'll never know if he would have, you know, if he would have still done the yes thing, or if that would have caught on in TNA, or, you know, who knows. But it's just so strange to look back and think that, wow, TNA could have had Paul Heyman and Daniel Bryan potentially, and instead they went in a different direction. And I mean, I'm not even going to bury Dixie about that one, because I don't know exactly what Paul was asking for. It may have been way, you know, if we knew the exact terms, it may have been like, well, can't blame her for that. But it, I mean, it's just, it's moments like that that just always make you wonder. And I would, maybe, Will, do you think maybe it keeps her up at night going, if only I had done this?
I don't think so. I don't think Dixie believes she's ever made a mistake.
Now, there is that. The other, I mean, I guess Kane, we should kind of address that. They were paired together, and Bryan, I mean, he had a blast. He talked about Dr. Shelby. We found out that Dr. Shelby's job gave him a limited number of days off. They wanted to do more with Dr. Shelby, but they just couldn't do it. But, Will, that doesn't explain why they've never brought him back. Why can't you bring Dr. Shelby back? Surely he's accrued more vacation time.
I would hope so. I think Dr. Shelby could come back. I would be fine if they just started doing Dr. Shelby, Kane, and Bryan vignettes again. Like, Bryan's hurt, but you have him around Tough Enough every Tuesday. Just fly Kane over to Tough Enough and sit them in a room together and let those guys record what will be a sitcom for WWE Network.
Yeah, say reality show. Dr. Shelby reality show. Granted, it's in character, but so are most people on reality shows.
Yeah, It's no more in character than anything else. Maybe if Brian and Bree ever need couples therapy, like on Total Divas, they could go to Dr. Shelby.
Oh, there you go. I've been looking here. If anybody out there ever spells Brie, B-R-I-E, you're right. If you spell it B-R-I, you're also right, apparently. That was one of the things. And that, I just noticed in the newer version of the book, B-R-I is still there. So I guess, Will, you can go either way with that one.
I believe they actually address that towards the beginning of the book. There's a note. It's on page 3. In text, Daniel Bryan refers to his wife, Brianna, as Brie, B-R-I, who is known to WWE fans as Brie Bella.
Now, maybe they cleaned it up, because
I think that was in the first version, too.
Yeah, I remember seeing B-R-I-E, though, like at different places in the first book. I know, no one cares. Just thought I'd mention it. Let's see, other WWE. Well, the Kane relationship, I mean, I thought it was nice that, I mean, Kane's this kind of grizzled veteran type, but he's friendly to a select few. Never, it doesn't seem like unprofessional, but guarded as far as who he lets in. And it just sounds like those guys were having so much fun together that just they couldn't help but become friends.
Yeah, it seemed like they bonded over things they were reading. They would drive around having very interesting discussions together, and it seemed like they got along super well. Brian. One of the interesting things is that in WWE for much of the time, he didn't seem super happy. Like, he talks about coming back. He talks about even winning Money in the Bank and things like that. He talks about all of those things, but he never seems explicitly happy in WWE. He's happy to be making a living and he's getting along and there's all that. But he even mentions at one time that he realized, like, driving down the road with Cesaro one time, he realized that WWE is a parody of wrestling. It's not actual wrestling. And then he felt better about WWE, which also they let him leave in there. Can you believe that?
I know. That shocks me. WWE, yeah. It's a parody of pro wrestling.
Yeah, and maybe that's why Cesaro was too Swiss. It was a way to get back at Brian. He talks about just forming the relationship with Kane and how he thought it was going to be just a silly tag team for a few weeks, and they ended up having this long tag title run and a great run together and great matches with the Shield, and how cool it was getting to know Kane. And Jason, did this book make you want to maybe tan some unusual body parts?
Yeah, there's a certain story. Do we spoil it? I mean, we're in the spoiler section.
But yeah,
I'll let you have some fun with tanning.
Yeah, I guess Kane was reading a strange book was it Kane or Brian that was originally reading it? Yeah, Brian was reading a book about a New Age medicine, kind of homeopathic type thing, and one of the things it said to do was to make sure you're getting plenty of sun all over your body. And it legitimately suggested tanning your, going to go with taint. So he talks about how he and Kane often joke around about tanning their taints, which I mean, I want to joke around with Kane about tanning my taint.
Well, I told you before we started, I've got an idea. If Tanner wins tough enough and he is Daniel Bryan's like clone, he the beard, the shirts, the height, the MMA thing, all of it. His name should be Tanner Taint, clearly. Think it'll happen?
I don't think so. It would be good. That would be a Lloyd Boner quality name.
The other part, I felt complete, absolute redemption. Daniel Bryan didn't want to be known as Team Hell No either.
Yes.
Team Friendship, Will. It was the right way to go, and that goddamn poll cost us Team Friendship.
I'm pretty upset at I was upset at the time.
Me too.
At everyone that voted in that poll. I think if you go back and listen to the .NET countdown from whatever week that happened, Jake and I declared that the worst moment of the week, and it may have made the worst of moment of the year that year.
I was scolding people in my review that night.
Yeah.
It was just like, how could you do this?
We were absolutely livid that would ever happen. And I'm glad that Brian and Kane felt the same way, because Team Friendship was absolutely the way to go. That to me was the biggest highlight of this entire book, was knowing that Team Friendship was the right name, and that WWE and their stupid fan poll got it wrong.
I don't buy or wear wrestling t-shirts because of what I do. I may have had to break that rule and purchase a Team Friendship shirt had they actually gone there. What else stands out from the WWE section? I mean, obviously, we'll get to the WrestleMania stuff and all that, but I mean, am I forgetting anything?
I think it's important to note just how so many things in his career weren't supposed to happen.
Yeah.
How the Money in the Bank win wasn't really supposed to happen. How he was jobbed out and just not used for so long after winning Money in the Bank, and it was a couple sudden injuries that led to him winning the title, that led to him doing the yes thing, that led to him obviously taking off in popularity, and how just fortunate his career was, how right place at the right time so many of the things in his career were. I mean, maybe even right down to the Nexus thing with him being brought back as as the surprise seventh man at SummerSlam after he was fired that year, instead of being, instead of just being part of the team that would lose to John Cena, he got to be on the winning team and be a key player in it. All of that, so exceptionally fortunate. And Brian, he even says, he's like, I'm a really lucky dude that all of this happened to me.
The other part is the SummerSlam thing. I think he bought their bullshit when it came. Vince was saying it wasn't the, sometimes it's the attraction. He had that line in the conference call. And even at the time, I'm like, maybe he must be talking about the other match, because it was kind of a 1-2 punch. I don't even remember what the other match on the show was.
Brock versus Punk was the other match on the show.
Yeah, but it was like, obviously, reading what Daniel Bryan had to say and everything, he didn't address that particular line. But, I mean, he's come to the conclusion that this was his fault too. Will, they did some of the worst booking ever for when Daniel Bryan was champion. The whole SummerSlam thing, I didn't think was as bad as they do, but I felt it could have been built up so much better. And I really think he bought into their crock of BS, where they wouldn't address the fact that their booking sucked. And for some reason, he's just accepted that, it was my fault, when it wasn't.
Yeah, that was a depressing part to read, because that entire time we were watching the TV going, why are they booking him this way? Even leading into that SummerSlam match, we were wondering, why couldn't he have won a number one contenders match against a heel? Like, why couldn't Daniel Bryan have won the number one contendership and have, challenged John Cena? And there were great moments, like the slapping promo with John Cena, that still astounds me that it got on WWE TV and that it was as good as it was. And there was the great match, and it's like 30 seconds after the match ended, reality set in and depression set in as well. But it's disappointing to hear him say, I wasn't a good champion, basically say, I deserve to be moved out of the main event.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's really disappointing as a fan who was sitting that whole time going, this is poorly booked, this isn't how you book a main event guy, what are they thinking, to then turn around and go, oh, wow, Brian thought it was right. And you wonder how much that run kind of messed with his confidence, the way WWE likes to mess with people's confidence.
Yeah, they clearly do. And I wish we would have gotten more about the dynamic that he has with Vince. I mean, it wasn't like the only time they talked was those two phone calls. I mean, he talked about going into meetings with Vince and obviously the promo class that we talked about. But it's still just a little bit more. Maybe it's because he works for the guy and there's not that many good things to say. Maybe it's just a very limited relationship. But certainly I think Triple H and Stephanie, I think there could have been more. What's the dynamic really like? Will, do you think that's because they may do more, and they just, as much as they're willing to, once enough time passes, kind of look back and talk about different things? Was it just too soon, and with using their logic, where, hey, we might want to do more, we don't want people who read Daniel Bryan's book thinking, they're just out there having fun?
Yeah, I think it might have been that the angle isn't over, like that the angle isn't truly over, and they didn't want everyone going, oh, it's fake, or oh, it's staged, or any of that. Not that it's necessarily the worst thing, but I think there's also a sense of, why would you write a book where you say mean things or anything about your boss?
I was surprised. He didn't tell the story. Maybe he wasn't aware of it. I don't remember when Shawn Michaels put it out there that he was talking about the angle he did where Shawn super kicked him in the Hell in a Cell match. And then the next night, Daniel Bryan put him in the Yes Lock and the crowd went nuts. Shawn has said they didn't even want to do that. Like, he was only supposed to do the super kick and then just that was
disappear.
Yeah. And it was him who fought to, like, come on, you got to give this guy something. And, I mean, it's just so as bad as their booking was at that time, imagine if they didn't even have that moment.
It would have been so disappointing. I mean, they just would have done nothing with Brian at that point. Like, he would have been a nothing, which is so depressing when you think about, what, 4 months later, they realized they needed him to main event WrestleMania. And you look at how poorly booked he was through that entire run, and it's really astounding. I mean, it is a masterpiece in how not to get a guy over, and yet somehow still, Brian got over.
How bitter is Sheamus going to be when he writes his book someday about... because he was supposed to face Daniel Bryan again at WrestleMania, and this time, you know, for the right reasons, Daniel Bryan got moved out of the thing. But I just, like, as frustrating as it was for Daniel Bryan, Sheamus is on the other end of this, too. And, like, I remember, like, as excited as people were, or riled up as they were about the short match that Daniel Bryan had, a lot of people were blaming Sheamus because he was the winner of that brief WrestleMania match they had, too. I kind of feel bad for that guy. But did you, reading that, did you come away feeling like that whole idea of the short match at Mania, there was some method to the madness, like they knew that that was going to somehow rile up the Daniel Bryan fans?
No. Did you?
I don't know. I don't think that was the case, but I didn't, like, reading what Daniel Bryan wrote about it, he didn't really clarify one way or another. I just wonder if that's going to come, if people are going to come to, some people will come to that conclusion.
I thought he wrote enough about it being the plan to get Sheamus over, and how the whole title reign was Sheamus shutting this guy up after a minute, you know, after like an 18 second match, and how, you know, how big that would be. I think Brian kind of made it clear that those in power thought, okay, Brian's done. It's Sheamus's time now.
The, you know, we mentioned AJ Lee being left out of the first draft of the book, and now she's been added, although, you know, albeit briefly. Another name that I was surprised not to see mentioned in the initial, and I'm kind of paging through, and I don't see it here in the area where I thought we would. There's no mention of Conor Mahalik in Daniel Bryan's book.
I think it might be in the epilogue, I want to say. I don't remember a ton about Conor in the... I don't remember a ton about Conor in the first draft or anything.
I don't even
It's not in the epilogue.
Yeah, I don't think he's mentioned.
He talks... I'm looking basically on the last page of the traditional book, and it's him celebrating at WrestleMania. Yeah, I don't think Conor is mentioned, which is kind of surprising when you know that whole story and you know how just deeply that affected a lot of people in WWE.
Yeah, and if this is like him saying I'm not going to embellish the relationship the way that maybe it has been on the air, like, you know, reading Justin Roberts' blog about that, it just made it seem like he wasn't taking any shots at Daniel Bryan, but it just kind of you got the feeling like that relationship was a bit overdone for television. I mean, he certainly went to him at WrestleMania afterwards, and so I just thought there'd at least be some mention of that.
Yeah, that's actually really surprising.
The championship win occurs, and I mean, do you have anything to say about that? It was kind of just, I don't recall anything jumping out at me as being very shocking there.
Yeah, it was a fun way to read about him winning it. Again, I thought that the Craig Tello pieces in that section actually got in the way of Daniel Bryan telling his story of that night, because by that point it was like they were on two separate portions of that night, and they were trying to almost trying to like split up Bryan's story into small little chunks to have more of that Craig Tello diary in there, and it didn't come off well. It didn't play well, and it wasn't necessary. Bryan's story of that evening was just fine. But it was a fun, you know, he talks about how he was never supposed to be there, how he had dreamed about the moment, and it was finally happening. And yeah, I thought that was nice.
The other, you know, before we get into the way things close out, I really enjoyed the chap, you know, just the different passages on his relationship with Bree. You know, it wasn't like he was going to share everything, obviously, but just talking about, you know, how they clicked initially and their early date that he didn't even know was a date, I think was the story. And they just kind of bonded over having these mutual interests with one another. And tough enough, or not tough enough, but Total Divas, didn't they pay for the entire wedding? It wasn't that the main reason they agreed to let them film?
Yeah, he was asked by them, he even talked about the proposal, how he wanted to do it a little bit. A few months down the line, he saw that they'd be in the city that they had what he considers their first date in. So he thought, hey, I'll do it there at the museum that we had our first date at, and it'll be great. And he already had the ring and everything, and Total Divas asked if they could film it for the show, and he was like, yeah, sure. And then Total Divas agreed to pay for the wedding, and he's like, we can get married on TV then. It's a free wedding. So Brian seems to live very, very frugally. I think he's always had that indie wrestler mindset of save your money, live within your means, and you know, do what you can to get by.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it kind of seems like when all is said and done, as much as he desperately wants to get back in the ring, as you mentioned earlier with his tweet, don't they want to basically just move off the grid when all is said and done?
Yeah, it seems like they want to just find a place in Arizona where they can have a completely self-contained and sustainable living space and get away from everyone.
And God bless this man. You and I know you'll agree with this. The man, he moved, I think, from California to Arizona for his dog.
That's a kind thing to do. I think that was part of that was a Total Divas story too. They talked about how Josie was alone for far too long, and how they didn't have anyone to put Josie up with. So Bree and he moved in with each other, moved to Arizona so Bree's mom could watch Josie when they were gone. And Josie's adorable. I mean, if anyone has benefited from this Daniel Bryan injury thing, it's Josie, who gets a lot of time with him.
What happened to the little fat dog that they took in?
Asparagus or who?
He dressed it in the book, and I'd heard the story before because it was around the time he was getting called back by WWE. I think they had an adoption kind of or temporary kind of deal, like whatever you call that, fostering. It was like a super overweight dog. It was like an elderly person that just gave it treats all day. And the dog would, like, walk three steps and be completely out of breath, and they took it in. I wanted my update on the fat dog.
You may have to, if we do get that those Daniel Bryan interviews. Yes. Or interview, you might have to ask him about that yourself.
And hopefully I can take the time to look up the dog's name. So, what happened to that fat dog of yours?
That's research. That needs to be done.
So, the clothes. We've talked about it many times. The roller coaster ride that Daniel Bryan's life had been there for a year, with I guess a little bit longer than that, even with being fired, being brought back, and all of that, and winning the championship after not even being scheduled to be in it, getting married, and then the unfortunate passing of his father. And will it made for? I mean, it's one of the sadder endings you'll read. But at the same time, I found it to be a very classy way to end the book, an unfortunate way, but you know, had to dry the eyes after reading that portion.
Oh yeah, it definitely, it's almost a cathartic end in a way, in that it's sad and it makes you feel things, and then you put it down and you're kind of pissed that you had feelings. Says someone whose wife makes fun of him when he cries around wrestling things. She's kind. She's a kind lady. When I read it, I was really bummed out for a while. Like, just thinking, wow. And should we say it? I don't know if we should say it or just let people get it. Basically, what do you think? I don't.
Well, I'm not sure which. I'll leave it up to you because I'm not sure exactly which portion of this you're talking about.
He talks about his dad dying. He talks about that roller coaster that we mentioned and everything. And then he basically says, if you asked him now if it was worth it, he would say it wasn't. And that set heavy with me. I mean, it's like two paragraphs from the end of the book, and I had to put the book down for a few minutes and just spend a little while thinking, like, and he talked about not being home with his family enough and not getting those hours that he missed with his dad back. And one of, I think, the telling things that he wrote here was he's not sure he wants to keep wrestling, but he's not sure what to do if he stops. And that's why he's still doing it.
I thought the interesting thing too, he said, was that he always just assumed that when he was done, they would be there and they'd make up for that lost time then. And he just, you know, unfortunately wasn't afforded that opportunity. And so it is a heavy ending. I wonder if he does the interviews, if his tune will change. I mean, it's going to be a hard one to broach, obviously, but I now that it's been taken away from him again, I mean, do you think he's fighting this hard to get back just because he doesn't know what else to do? Because I don't. I think that when he wrote the book, I don't doubt for a second that he felt that way. And, you know, there's still going to be a part of him that the fact that he missed out on a lot of time that he could have spent with his father, I'm sure he's always going to regret that. But I think once it's taken away from you, I mean, he's a guy that we've said could probably just live off the grid and find something else to do and be okay with it, not make as much money, obviously. But he's fighting to get back. I think he desperately wants this.
I think so, too. And that's the weird dichotomy there where he says in the book, and it seems like he really believed as he wrote that epilogue that it wasn't worth it. But at the same time, you read or you see what he's doing now, and that's after writing it and this being publicly available in some way. You see now him saying, hey, I want to get back. I need to get back. I want to keep wrestling. I love doing this. And it's an odd dichotomy there, those things. And it is an odd, I guess, picture of Brian, the human being. And that's one of those places where I thought, man, that was really honest. Like that was really, really, really honest in a way. You don't find wrestling books that are that honest. I mean, the most honest the Chris Jericho books get are, well, I had a bad match and I drank a lot. Like those tend to be the honest, reflective moments from Jericho. And Mick Foley,
it involves his mother. There were some definite moments there, especially when he ended up forgiving the guy that ended up, you know, paralyzing his mother, essentially.
Yeah, those were rough, but aside from that, and I'm thinking also about Jericho's third book, which is the most recent one that I read that I really thought was unnecessary. But you don't get those honest moments from a lot of guys. And I never thought that Brian was delusional. And if anything, I think Brian thinks less of himself than fans think of him in a way. Like he thinks he doesn't see in a lot of ways what a... Inspiration isn't the word I want to use here, but it's hard for me to find another one. He doesn't see what he means to people, and he doesn't see the big deal that Daniel Bryan became to people, especially at the, you know, at during 2013 and all of that drama, and at WrestleMania in 2014.
Well, and I guess that's the thing I'm going to take away from the book is that if, well, amongst others, I shouldn't say that's the only thing, but he... I guess if you go, if you're a Daniel Bryan fan coming in, there's absolutely nothing in this book that's going to make you have a second thought. I mean, I think because Daniel Bryan, and not the over the top crazy no and yes guy, but just the interviews you see when Daniel Bryan is basically being himself, it's Daniel Bryan, and that's how the book comes across to me. It's just he's just open. He's honest. He's even though he addresses, I think, having some anxiety issues and things like that in the book, he just comes across as like just such a natural, down-to-earth, humble person. And there was nothing in the book that made me view him any differently as far as that's concerned. And I consider that to be a major positive.
Yeah, that is...
I mean, how depressing would it be, Will, if, like, the whole book is just a burial of, like, ah, screw Gabe Sapolsky.
It would have been really sad if the whole book was just like, well, and then WWE finally got it that I was the big star they were waiting for, and they decided to put me in the main event of WrestleMania, which I deserve to be in, because I'm great. F-word The Rock, D-Bry.
And all these stupid smart marks, I conned them along for the ride, and they got behind me.
Yeah, I realize how to promote myself on the internet by making people like me. Well, guess what, losers?
Yeah, he comes off very well here, and so I give it a B+. You give it a B+, and I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to feel like that's a disappointing grade. Anything below an A, I think people start to go, maybe it's not that good. But I do strongly recommend it. I can't, even though there's things I would like to see him go into more detail on, just a very good read, a quick one at 300, just over 300 pages, and Will, I know you're pleased that they added some pictures to the new draft.
Yeah, it's fun. They're fun to look at. It's nice to see. I think actually the first draft we were sent had pictures. They were just really poor quality because it's poor printing, because it's meant for proofreading words, not looking at pictures. But there's a nice little photo insert in the middle as well that's kind of fun. You get pictures of Brian as a little kid, or as a baby. He was fat.
Like his dog.
It's adorable. But it is a really, really good read. It's a great book. I would say go out of your way to pick it up, to read it, and to just to give your thoughts on the story as well. I go B+ because it's not a definitive wrestling book to me, and to me that's what you need to be in the A wrestling book range, but it is a really good wrestling story, far better than I'd say probably 90-95% of the wrestling books that have been written,
and far better than a lot of the WWE sanctioned books. Especially some of the ones they were doing in the Attitude Era. I think like the Hardy book, for instance. Like, already, really? And not that I don't even recall. I don't even know if I read the thing or not. So I'm not even trying to bury the book, but it's just there were like China's story felt premature. There's just things like that where it's like, oh boy, you guys are just trying to pump these out to make some money. And I didn't come away feeling like that at all with this book.
Yeah, no, this didn't feel like a money grab. This felt like a story that they all earnestly wanted to tell.
And a shout out, St. Martin's Press. Will, they've been great to deal with. We got a copy of the book so early, which is nice with the busy schedules we have. It gave us plenty of time to go ahead and read this, and hopefully they're able to follow through, and we get to talk to Daniel Bryan and ask him some of the questions we have about the book. But anything else you want to touch on before we wrap up this very first meeting of the .NET Book Club?
No, nothing at the time. I think next week maybe we should read, I don't know, Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, maybe?
See, that's not fair. You've already read that. Probably like 5 times.
Probably more.
I saw the movie. Does that count?
No, that never counts. Are you going to watch the Daniel Bryan DVD instead of seeing the movie, or instead of reading the book?
If I could have, yeah. Well, all right. If it was like the same story, yeah. I'm lazy like that, man. I'm not even going to lie. I won't even my schedule. No, give me the choice between like Game of Thrones on TV or Game of Thrones the books. I'm going with the TV show every time.
I disagree with you on a lot of those counts, but this was a good read. Check it out, guys.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll definitely do this again once I actually read something. There's a really good bet that the next time the .NET Book Club gets together, I just won't be involved because it takes me way too much time, but we'll definitely do something again. So until then, take care.